Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty.
Excellent. We have our patter down pat now after it's only been 8 months. And we are on the strength of that. We're going to do some myth busting today. And we're super excited about this conversation. We're also super excited for everybody to remember the Marty and Laura Show is going to be, although Marty and Laura will not be there, the Marty and Laura Show is going to be on site in Mukilteo on September 6th for the Wagfest. So everybody, if you're in the Seattle general vicinity, stop by Wagfest and check out the Marty and Laura Show there. It's also our friends at Doggett and the Seattle Kennel Club are sponsoring this really fantastic way to reach out to pet owners in Seattle and vicinity. So we're really happy to be participating in that. So with that little tiny tidbit, myth busting, Marty.
Yeah.
Listener question, what are the natural remedies for keeping external parasites off of our pets? And I sent the text to Marty and said, so let's do this as a episode. And she said, no. Are there any? And the answer was no, and that's not going to take half an hour. So I said, well, okay, then let's do myth busting.
Because, I can't talk for 30 minutes about, no, it doesn't work. So don't do it.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Let's talk about why. So here's a myth busting opportunity. All the eucalyptus and citronella and lavender and whatever it is that you want to spray on your dog is not going to actually successfully prevent external parasites. That is your estimation. Yes, Marty?
Yeah. And they may help a little, but don't forget, just because it says natural doesn't mean safe, because there's a lot of things that are natural that aren't safe. Chocolate's natural. It's not safe for your dog. There are lots of things that we can put on our dogs or in our dogs that simply aren't safe. So I would strongly encourage you to work with your veterinarian to find an appropriate treatment. Now, if you have an MDR1 dog, which are typically the white-footed dogs, you have to be aware that there are some differences in what medications they could take, but it's not even the long list that some people would like to believe that it is. So we can kind of go into that. Ivermectin is the first really effective heartworm preventive that came to market. We had diethylcarbamazine for many years, and that's what I used when I first graduated from veterinary school. It was given on a daily basis, came as a tablet or it came as a chewable, and it was horrid because you had to give it every 24 hours. And if the dog was heartworm positive, it could kill the dog. And so there was a lot of badness that went with it, but it was better than heartworm disease. But somewhere in the 90s, early 90s, ivermectin came to market as HeartGuard, and it's still on the market as HeartGuard. And then there are some other newer ones that have come along that are in similar drug classes. And ivermectin was a mold found in the soil in Japan. So I think that's pretty natural. It's a mold from the soil. It's not like somebody made this up in a laboratory. Now, of course, they've synthesized it, but essentially that's what it is. So if you're looking for something natural, ivermectin is great. And it is appropriate if you have an MDR1 dog to be aware of it, but the amount of ivermectin that's in the HeartGuard and some of the other Iverheart and a lot of the other ivermectin-based products is tiny, tiny, tiny amount. It's in micrograms and you give it once a month. The trouble people got into with the MDR1 dogs was when they were giving it at larger doses, or they were miscalculating the dose, or they were giving it on something like a daily basis or a weekly basis for other parasites. So if you're giving good old HeartGuard or Iverheart Max or Iverheart whatever, those are all still pretty safe. One of the similar drugs to that is selamectin, found in Revolution, Revolt, some of those other products. Again, selamectin, ivermectin are very similar. So for instance, one of my employees' dogs, she had goats and the dog got into the tack box and chewed up a whole bottle of ivermectin and the dog did die from an ivermectin toxicity. Yes. But if you're talking about 68 micrograms given to your Sheltie once a month, it's safe even if you have an MDR1 dog. So that tiny little dose isn't a problem. It's when we were giving it for scabies mites or Demodex mites or, you know, bigger doses or people that were trying to save a little bit of money. And instead of buying the chewable heart guard, they went to the store and they bought the ivermectin for cattle or pigs, mm-hmm. which if you miscalculate the dose can be a problem. I was on a Yahoo list one day, and a lady with Bernese Mountain Dogs had taken some for her dog. Mm-hmm. And instead of giving 0.6 milliliters, she was giving 6 milliliters because she had not put on her reading glasses and seen that there was a decimal point. Did she have a toxicity? Yes, she did. Should you wear your reading glasses when you're dosing your dog? Yes, you should. If you're in the age group that you need readers, put them on.
And a bright light and sometimes a magnifying glass.
Yeah, and you can actually get a magnifier.
Don't ask me how I know, you know.
Yes, yeah. On your phone you can get a little magnifier device that does lighting and magnification. So it's handy at a restaurant if you can't read the menu, and it's handy to read your prescription labels. So yeah, take advantage of those tools that you have at your fingertips that we didn't used to have in the old days.
Okay, so there are many, many, many sort of, what do we call them? Urban legends. When it comes to dogs, and I don't want to poo-poo people's things. And so I think it's very important that we understand that. And I think everybody wants to do the right thing for their dogs. But I think that there are just urban legends. There are myths that we can help people understand are myths and make a better outcome for your dogs. So natural parasite control, unless your dog is under 8 weeks old or what? That's the only time I know.
Yeah. So it depends on the product. Some are 4 weeks, some are 6 weeks, some are 8 weeks, some are 2.2 pounds, some are 4 pounds. So there's differences. So most of these products are safe as soon as the puppy gets to be between 4 and 8 weeks of age and you're using the right dose and the right medication and all those things. So we have to worry about intestinal parasites. We have to worry about heartworm. We have to worry about fleas and ticks. And it's not just that fleas and ticks are icky. Like, I don't want a tick attached to me. I've had them attached to me, usually from a client dog that apparently came walking in on the dog and decided that I looked like a better meal. But remember that the diseases that fleas carry, that ticks carry, that heartworm, that intestinal parasites, all of those are really bad diseases. So if you're looking at what the alternative is, if you're looking at, well, you know, could I be okay if my dog got heartworm disease? Well, most dogs live through heartworm disease, but it's thousands and thousands of dollars and it's really hard on the dog. I was just doing some reading for the heartworm preventive lecture that I did for Revival, and I found that there's a whole thing that's happening in microclimates in bigger cities where there's really tall buildings. We don't have that issue where I live because the tallest building is the feed mill, and there's only one of them in each town. But if you're in the city where there's really, you know, like a lot of skyscrapers and things like that, the microclimates in between them are keeping the temperatures warm enough that the mosquitoes are a bigger problem. So even if you live in Chicago, downtown New York, you know, some of those places, you have to be concerned. So you should be concerned about heartworm preventive. You should be concerned about your flea and tick preventives because those are really life-saving. We see dogs that die of Lyme disease. We see dogs that die from these diseases. There's not a day that goes by in my practice. We have an 8-doctor practice. There's not one day that goes by that we don't have a positive dog for tick-borne disease. So that would be Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and Ehrlichia. One of those shows up every single day in my practice, which means the people who said that they were giving their heartworm preventive, their flea and tick preventives, they probably weren't really doing them as they should year round and on a monthly basis.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. We'll stick with ticks.
Yeah.
There are a variety of products in which the tick can still bite your dog before it dies, passing on whatever grossness it's going to pass on. Right. So do you have recommendations about specific products? We talked about this a little bit in our parasite control one, but specific products that will keep the bugs from biting your dog at all, never mind just killing them when they do.
So the topicals are going to give you better repellency. The topicals, however, do have the side effect for some dogs that they get the heebie-jeebies as the product dries. Some of them get this weird, creepy, crawly feeling on their skin. And having used a permethrin product on myself, because my daughter came home when she was, she's 40 now, when she was in kindergarten, this was a hot minute ago, she came home with scabies, so we had to use it. And I will tell you, the heebie-jeebies, that it's a real thing. Like, my skin felt stranger than any other time in my life. So yes, the dogs that have those intolerances are better off with either a Seresto collar or an oral. Now, the orals have the side effect. There is a small percentage of dogs that, if they tend to have seizures, are more prone to have a seizure if they're on the orals. And there are four. There's Simparica, Credelio, NexGard, and Bravecto. Now, what's really important that people understand that's new is Bravecto just came to market with a one-year injectable product. So you take your dog to the vet, you go in for your vaccines, you go in for your whatever. Your dog can get a one-year injection for flea and tick control from Bravecto, and they can get a one-year injection from ProHeart, which will control heartworm disease. It won't do intestinal parasites, but it'll do heartworm, and you could technically get both of those. A lot of people are concerned about doing both of them at the same time without knowing how the dog's going to react, but you can go in and get an injection for each of those things and then never have to give your dog another chewable, heartworm, flea and tick, any of those products. So if you have a dog that's difficult to medicate, or the dog doesn't like the medication, or their dog vomits up the medication, or one of the other thousand reasons, or you just forget to give it. Like, it can be hard to remember these things. Every 12 weeks for Bravecto, every month for heartworm preventive, every month for the others. I put it in my calendar. So on the first of every month, my little alarm goes off and it says, give your heartworm preventive. And then on the 15th of the month, it goes off and it says, give your flea and tick preventive. It's just really useful to have those tools. But if you're really bad at that, or you live in an area where there's a resistance problem for heartworm, or you live in an area where the ticks are just thick, which is Wisconsin and Minnesota and the East Coast, you may be better off with the injectable product. So talk to your veterinary clinic about it. And the safety is really, really good on this product, according to what the literature is telling us.
Interesting. That is super interesting. And that is brand new. So a little breaking news here on the Marty and Laura show.
Yes. It's only been about 3 weeks now. It's very new.
Awesome. So another myth-busting opportunity. There are folks that want to, again, sort of limit the amount of exposure to whatever chemical they think is okay. So they will, instead of giving their preventatives of various kinds exactly every 30 days, we'll stretch that out, make it maybe 45 days. You know, maybe they don't live in Wisconsin with a high tick population, right? So let's talk about that.
Yeah, if you follow the directions on the package that your veterinarian has provided you, whether it's every 12 weeks, not 13 weeks, not every 3 months, every 12 weeks, every 30 days, if you follow those instructions and you can prove that you purchased that amount and it's on your dog's invoice from your vet clinic, so you can't go in with two dogs and say, just put them all under one, I'm just going to share it. Don't do that. Have each dog invoice separately. And if you follow those instructions, if you had a negative heartworm test, a negative fecal, a negative, all the stuff, the tick-borne diseases, if you have all those negative and your dog still gets that disease, the company will pay for your treatment. And heartworm can be thousands of dollars. Lyme disease can be thousands of dollars. So follow the instructions and do what your veterinarian tells you, and don't try to cheat. Everybody comes in and I, you know, will say, okay, well, let's send you a year's worth of heartworm preventive today, and we'll send you a year's worth of flea and tick. Well, you know, I might have a couple doses left over. The answer is you should not. If we sent you a year's worth, they should be gone. It's just like antibiotics. If you are sent with a two-week supply, give it as directed until the 2 weeks are up, and don't try to cheat the system. Don't think you're going to get by with it. It's not worth it, because you're putting your dog at risk. And your poor dog is not the one that should pay the price for you thinking that you can cheap out, or that you're better off to do it your own way, because these labeled products have been tested and they know what the efficacy is. They know what the duration is. They can show you on graphs when the amount of the medication starts to drop below a certain level that FDA wants it to be to give you the preventive. So, you know, if you follow the instructions, it is well worth it, because you're going to be protecting your pet and your wallet by getting the instructions right and getting the guarantee that these companies have. So don't try to cheat the system. Don't try to borrow your neighbors if the dog died next door or whatever. Just do the right thing.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Let's talk about some other myths that they have in the dog world. Coconut oil. Can you help me understand what coconut oil will do for my dog's coat or nose? Or
yeah, if they've got a dry nose, it might help. If they've got a dry coat, it might help. But there are better alternatives. There's some really good products on the market for those kinds of things. Coconut oil won't hurt them. Zinc oxide won't hurt them, but it may not get you what you need. If you're feeding a well-balanced diet that is made by one of our bigger manufacturers that we know what their nutrients should be, again, there's millions and billions of dollars of research that goes into knowing what the right nutrition should be for your dog. So as soon as you start messing with it, if you start changing the diet by more than 10%, so if you're feeding 90% or more dog food from a commercially available diet that's labeled for an appropriate breed, appropriate age category, all that stuff, you're really going to be better off than trying to concoct something magical on your own, because you're probably going to mess up a really well-balanced diet. Sorry, folks.
And I think it's really important to understand that dogs are not people and they don't have to have a different meal every night. And that variety is not the spice of life. It just isn't. And that just because you don't want to eat your dog's kibble doesn't mean that you should buy your dog the farmer's dog food.
Yeah, you know, if we ate as well-balanced a diet as our dogs could, especially the prescription diets, if your dog has a liver problem, a kidney problem, a heart problem, a skin problem, if your cat has a bladder problem, it is absolutely amazing what these diets can do nutritionally. And if I ate a diet that was as appropriate as my dog's diet, I would probably be much healthier. My question whenever I go to one of these lectures that's done by a pet food manufacturer, especially if they're talking about longevity, They'll say, well, you know, we feed this and we add this and we add L-carnitine and we add fatty acid ratios and all this stuff. I go up to the speaker afterwards and say, okay, I know you work for the company. What supplements do you take? I don't say, do you take a supplement? Right. I know these people have all read the research and They're all taking the supplements. I know that. It's pretty magical what they can do. So I listen to these nutritionists because they're way smarter about this stuff than I am. They spend their life crafting dog food that's meant to be ideal or cat food that's meant to be ideal for your pet. So follow the directions that they're giving you. Don't be messing with it.
Well, and I like to compare it to something like, I don't know, Ensure, right? Like a made food that is made to make us able to be healthy, has all the stuff.
Yeah. Take your multivitamin, take your DHA. It's good for your brain. You know, do all the stuff. They know DHA reduces the risk of dementia. So write down DHA and then go to the store and buy, or go to Amazon and buy DHA because it's good for your brain. But if you don't write it down,
come on,
you're going to forget. Well, but fish oil is, it's a DHA based product. So, you know, just follow the instructions.
Okay. So next up on the myth busting, what's your favorite myth that comes in? Those we've had from listeners. You see clients every day. What's your favorite myth they come in?
I think vaccine hesitancy is a concern.
That's great. I think we really, it's a topic right now. Like people are talking about it.
It is.
It's a topic in the world. And so I think it's really important that we talk about how this addresses and how this affects our animals as well as us.
Right. Especially rabies, because the vaccinations we give to our pets for rabies is meant to protect our health. We were talking last night at dinner with my kids, and there was a positive for rabies bat found in Wisconsin this week. So rabies is out there. It's a real thing. And there are people that die from rabies. Every year, there's at least one person in the U.S. that dies of rabies with no known exposure. So your pets are the buffer between you and wildlife. So make sure that your pets are up to date on their rabies vaccinations. The other things are going to be based on lifestyle. Some dogs don't go many places. They aren't exposed. But even if they just go to the groomer every 6 weeks, they're still exposed to other dogs. So if your veterinarian goes through a lifestyle history with you and says, do you need influenza? Do you need Bordetella? If you need Bordetella, you probably need influenza as well. All those things are really important in assessing what your dog's vaccine should be. Lepto is now a core vaccine almost everywhere in the country. It used to be a little bit more, some veterinarians were reluctant to give it because if we were going to see a vaccine reaction, it was often to lepto, but they've made the vaccines much cleaner. They're much less likely to cause that. And lepto is out there. We see dogs every year with lepto. I've seen dogs die from lepto. So just, you know, again, talk to your veterinarian, the American Animal Hospital Association, all these organizations, ACVIM, which is the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine, they're all saying now that you should have lepto vaccines and that should be given every year. So again, don't try to cheat the system or think that you're saving yourself some money, because the extra $20 for the lepto vaccination, if you end up with your dog spending thousands and thousands of dollars in the hospital, it's not worth it. And again, if you have current vaccinations and you can prove it, the vaccine companies will stand behind their products. So trust your veterinarian to make good recommendations, not just that they're, oh yeah, we just want a little more money out of your pocketbook. Trust your vet.
Talk to us about, in that, you know, the sort of minimal vaccine protocol, all the ways that we talk about this conversation, do you have advice for people who are reluctant to vaccinate their dogs annually, for example, for distemper? I mean, some of those kind of things, the titering and some of the options that are available to people who have these concerns.
Sure. And back in 1999, we started changing our vaccine protocols in our practice. I mean, that was 26 years ago. That was a long time ago. 26 years ago, this changed. So if your vet is still giving you an annual distemper parvo vaccination, unless you're in an endemic area, you probably don't need that frequency. But yes, you can certainly have titers done. The recommendation that I do is we send them all to the University of Wisconsin CAVID lab, C-A-V-I-D. It's Lori Larson, which used to be Ron Schultz's lab. Ron has retired and passed away, but Lori Larson still runs the lab, and it's a great way to get the testing done so that you know. And they do some testing in-house, but I don't think it's as accurate as what they do at the diagnostic lab. So send in a titer. You probably don't need it every year. And if it comes back that your dog has a very protective level, you can probably go 2, 3, 4 years between vaccinations. Now, the only two things that we test for are going to be distemper and parvo. And that's the distemper, adeno, parainfluenza, parvo, that combination vaccine. So you probably don't need to give that as frequently as annual. It may be every 3 years. It may be every five. It may be never again. Your pet may be fine. Now, lepto, Lyme, Bordetella, those are annual. They're bacterial diseases. They don't give you good long-lasting immunity. There's a difference. So follow your label directions.
That's why I wanted to make that distinction, because lepto, even though you're saying it's a cleaner vaccine than it's been, there's multiple serovars out there in leptospirosis.
We can only vaccinate for four. There's probably more, but there's no other product on the market. So there's a test for lepto. So I've had clients argue with me about this. Mm-hmm. Well, you can test for it. If we test for lepto, we're testing for the disease, not for a titer. Oh, there's a difference. Yes. So annually you should get Lyme, annually you should get lepto, annually you should get Bordetella, annually you should get influenza. If your dog needs Bordetella, it needs influenza as well. So just be paying attention to that. And there were two strains of influenza for a few years, but now we're back down to one. H3N2 is the only one that currently is out there. So the H3N8 vaccine was unavailable. It's back available again from one manufacturer. Again, breaking news as of last week. Yep. This is all new stuff. So pay attention to that. Yeah. So if your dog needs that, then that's what you should do. And then if you're using the appropriate tick preventives, you may not need Lyme unless you're in endemic areas. So just, you know, really pay attention. And if you go to the capsivet.org website, you can pick the disease. There's viral diseases, parasitic diseases. You can put the disease in. So there's a little pull down menu. You can put in your zip code and you can see how frequently these diseases are showing up in your county. So do your research before you go to your vet clinic, print off the map if you need to, go in and talk to your vet and your vet tech about this so that you're getting the right vaccines based on where your exposures are.
Yeah. And I think it's really important, because I think the biggest part is people feel like they don't have any control and they want to feel like they have control over their pet's well-being. And so what I wanted to share is that there are ways that you can make decisions and that you can have some not feeling out of control over this, right?
Right. And if your vet won't discuss this with you, you may need to find another veterinary clinic, because your vet should be pretty open about discussing lifestyle, risk assessment, all those things. American Animal Hospital Association is a really great survey. So go in prepared. Don't go in like talking about your neighbor or your sister's brother or whatever, your sister's cousin, whatever. But go in and say, this is the information that I have. This is my lifestyle. This is my pet's lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Tell me what I need to do. And make sure that you're going to somebody that you trust. Because if you don't, then find a vet that you do feel comfortable with. They should be very willing to discuss this with you if they're open-minded about it. I wouldn't go to a veterinary clinic or a physician that I didn't feel was listening to me.
Yeah, I think that's important, is building that relationship. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other?
There's one more. Yeah, there's one more myth.
Yes, go for it.
And I just learned this a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't written the blog about it yet, but I need to. So it's how to cool your dog down in a situation where your dog is overheated. And I was at a bunch of dog shows this summer, and I watched all these people put wet blankets on their dogs to try and cool them off. And they did this really cool study, and I will send you the link so that people can find it, or they can Google it. But the trick to this for the working dogs that overheat, or any dog that might overheat, is to teach the dog to stick their head up to their eyes into a bucket of water. And the water will cool them faster than anything else that they tested. So be aware that that's a new technique.
Huh. They should hold their breath while they're underwater?
You can teach them to bob for apples. So basically you can teach them by putting their head in a little bit of water and they make it deeper and deeper. But yes, they'll learn to blow bubbles out of their nose, reach in and grab an apple or a treat or whatever you want it to be. But by doing that, you will instantly cool the dog. We don't really understand the mechanism, but it works better than alcohol, better than ice packs, better than a cold tub of water, better than a wading pool, better than a pond. It's the ticket. So it's very cool and it's very new.
That's very interesting information. I would be personally super nervous about putting a dog's head underwater that was hyperventilating. But, you know, that's just me.
But you train them to do this so that if they do overheat, that they are trained to do this and blow bubbles. So you're not shoving the dog's head into the bucket of water. You're teaching them to basically.
Thank you for clarifying. That's good.
Yes. So teach them before you need it. Like a lot of things, teach them to ride in a crate in your car, teach them all the things that they need to know, teach them some skills. It's no different than teaching your dog to come when they're called. It's a skill. So make sure that you've taught the dog this. If you have a working dog or a dog that may at times be in a situation that they could overheat, well, I'll send you the link to the video.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
Yeah,
AKC funded the research. Yeah, AKC funded it. It's a part of the Pennsylvania Working Dog Group. And it's very cool how well this works. So I watched all these people stand there with their dogs with a blanket over them, or you wet down the dog and then stick them in a crate, and basically you've just steamed them.
Yes.
So, you know, when you put a hot dog in a bun, you've steamed it. Don't
I tell people all the time, this is like my big winky doodle. Like, your cool coat on the top of the dog is doing zero for your
It's actually
dog.
Doing harm. It's actually
doing
steaming
harm.
The dog.
Put the cool coat on the ground and the dog's feet on the cool coat.
Right.
We used to do a thing similar to your water bucket description. When we had a super hot dog, we would get the chamois cloth and dip it in the ice chest full of cold water, wring it out, and wrap it around their entire head. So ears, jowls, underneath, because where dogs let out their heat is underneath of them, not on the top of them.
Right. So. Right. It's a new technique, and we'll put the link to the video up so that people can jump on and watch it. And then you don't have to just believe that I said that that's what they taught us at the class that AKC put on, but that it's actually got research behind it. They tested every technique, and this was the chosen technique because it's the most effective.
Fascinating. See?
Very cool.
Guys, here at the Marty and Laura Show, you learn something new every day. And Marty just lives for the times that she gets to blow my brain up and just watch my eyes kind of spin counterclockwise. So
it's hard.
We should.
It's hard, but every show, man, every show I'm going to get you.
Make it a goal. Make it a goal, people. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We will catch you next week on the Marty and Laura Show.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health.
From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.